I loved the, what is it? The Wonder Twins?
Unite!
The Wonder Twins, and they have their rings and they go together and she becomes an animal and he becomes a pail of water. You know what I mean? I always thought it was hilarious. Like he was making people slip, you know, because he would like spill himself as a pail of water. But, you know, I always thought, well, it's kind of weird because Aquaman will jump into the ocean and call his dolphin friends. But you know, even the Wonder Twins and their cheesy powers are still cooler than talking to fish, you know what I mean?
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, it's episode 70, and I hear you've been dabbling in bike commuting.
Yes, well, that was last weekend. Bryce wanted to go to the grocery store. Well, Bryce wanted to go biking. We needed to go to the grocery store, so I said, hey, we'll kill two birds with one stone. Jimmy does this all the time. You know, he's got the kids and the bikes and he gets all of his water for his beer and he does all this stuff. So we went to the grocery store. How far away is Ralph's from here?
A mile and a half, maybe.
Yeah. So a mile, not far, yeah. Not bad, very flat. So Bryce and I go, we have our bags, we have a backpack. We're just getting a few things. And I was like, oh, look at this, sparkling water's on sale. So I bought like 10 bottles of sparkling water.
And like, what kind of bikes are you guys on? Just like cheapy mountain bikes or something, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Just regular, you know, no urban arrows for us.
Yeah.
So on the way back, Bryce has some of the groceries and then I have the water bottles and, I think I have a gallon of milk. So I have some decent weight as far as like all the stuff.
Sure. Now you don't have a rack or anything, do you?
I got nothing. I got bags of groceries.
Just hanging off the handlebars.
On my handlebars.
Oh man. You're like ghetto, man. You're ghetto.
So I get halfway home and pretty good. You know, there's a little rubbing. I'm figuring out how to keep the bags from rubbing the front tire.
And are these like the reusable canvas bags or something?
Yeah, they're reusable canvas bags.
Okay.
So then it starts bouncing.
Oh no.
And it was just like this rhythmically, like, it was catching a tire and like skipping out and then like, and it would do it again. And it was doing it very slowly. So I was like, let me just move that out a little bit. And I moved it out and there's a fence we were passing by and I hit the fence and it just smashed into the tire. And then Bryce was ahead of me and he stopped and he looked back and I was like, I almost lost control. And I would call it it was like a low speed crash. I kept control. I was able to stop, but I must have sounded horrible because, you know.
And you're like on the sidewalk.
I'm on the sidewalk. Yeah. Luckily.
Yeah.
And, I almost took it all. I almost took myself out completely.
Did the milk make it safe?
The milk made it safe. The water made it safe. Okay. I think we lost one of the bags because it was just like rubbed.
But the contents were good.
Yeah. Yeah. It had a hole in it, but yes, I was like, we need a basket or something on this thing.
Gotcha. Oh, man. Yeah, that's for sure. Like either a basket on the handlebars or a rack, or you need something to like get your stuff.
Or like a bigger backpack.
Yeah, maybe. Well, how about we just jump into a beer so we can recover from that? So
there we go.
Well, how about you go first since you've been trying to catch me the past few weeks?
Okay. Well, I don't think I caught you this week, but I have a nice one here.
I don't know. Well, okay, let's see.
So I have an Allagash Triple.
Ah, cool, cool.
Which probably, you know, it falls under, you like that, right? This is something right up your alley, I think.
I've had that one before. Yeah, I've had that one before. It's a good one.
So let me get this here. And of course, I have the Tripel Carmelite glass to drink it out of.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Well, how's it look there?
It looks good.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
Beautiful golden ale.
So an Allagash, huh? All right. What's the ABV on it? Do you know?
The ABV on this, I know we know, is 9%.
Whoa. Man, the beer I was thinking would have beat you because there's a beer I'm going to do. It's above 9, but this time I threw you a softball.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Yeah. 5.9%. equipment. It's a Telegraph.
Oh, sweet.
Out of Santa Barbara. Telegraph Brewing Company out of Santa Barbara. Obscura Vulpine. It's sour red ale aged in oak wine barrels.
Mmm, nice.
So it's corked. It says the word Vulpine means like a fox.
Ah.
Here we're referring to the deep reddish hues of Obscura Vulpine, a beer brewed especially for barrel aging. What goes into the wood is a rich malty and ruby colored, comes out a complex sour garner ale with notes of dried tart cherries, red currants, and oak. This is a beer as artful as the favorite forest canine. All right, it's corked, so let me get this guy going here.
Get that cage off of there.
Yeah. Here we go. Hoppa. Okay, let's see. Oh man, that smells like a fruity sour. It almost smells like wine or so. Oh wow, that's a different color than I was expecting.
Oh yeah. We've had that at our beer tastings at work, and I'm not a fan of these sours.
So you've had the same one?
No, it looked like that. It is a very similar sour.
Oh okay, I gotcha. Yeah, Obscura Series, Santa Barbara, California, Telegraph. So, well, let's see. Let me take a sip here. Yeah, it's not as fruity as I was anticipating. I was worried this thing was going to be like over the top. Like, for, you know what it is though? It is a little like you could taste the wine, like the grape of the wine and the, probably whatever it gets out of the wine barrel and everything. But it's almost like a pale ale with a hint of wine notes. You know, like it's almost like a sparkling wine. It's very interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's good. All right. So we got your bike commuting story out of the week.
And then I had a very busy week running all over town. So on Monday night, I went to the East-West Players Gala, which in conjunction with the Asian Pacific Islander group at work.
East-West Players?
East-West Players. So that's the name of the organization. It's the, okay, I'll read it. The nation's premier Asian American theater. It was founded in 1965, and it is the longest running professional theater of color and the largest producing organization of Asian American artistic work. So it was quite a crowd. And it was fun because, you know, there's a lot of Asian Americans, you know, a lot of talented people there. So the coolest thing to me about the evening was Reggie Lee is an Asian American actor, and he is also on the board of the East-West Players board member. He's a board member of the East-West Players.
Like the board of directors.
Yeah, exactly. So Reggie Lee's in there, and his whole table where he came out of the crowd to address the audience, his whole table was his co-stars of Grimm. He was on Grimm for 6 years.
Oh, okay.
And that was, you know, the 6 year NBC TV show.
Yeah, Clarice is watching it right now as we speak.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm dead serious. She's watching it on Amazon Prime.
So it's funny to me. I watched the first couple of seasons and I kind of fizzled out on it.
As did I.
Yeah, the coolest thing about it was Reggie went up to the front to do the fundraising part of the evening, which is amazing. I had no idea how much money they raised during this event. It was mind-blowing. But at the end of the evening, when I saw that table, because they're kind of stars that I kind of knew from the couple of years that I watched the show, it was very interesting to see them say goodbye to each other. There was like a genuine affinity for everybody, and everybody was like, it was such a heartfelt goodbye. Like they kind of use this event as some kind of gathering since they've stopped a couple of years ago. I guess 2017 is when they stopped. So they probably stopped in 2016. Filming, you know, or maybe even earlier.
Oh, okay.
But it was really fun to see them like talk to each other and truly say goodbye in this deep way. But it's kind of off in the distance, you know. I didn't encroach upon them, but it was really kind of neat. So that was my Monday night. Tuesday night, we had family from out of town. My cousin and her husband and her two kids. They're in San Diego, which so it's kind of in town, a little far. But we're like, oh, they came from, you know, Northern Virginia. Let's go and see them. So we drove down to San Diego on Tuesday night and had dinner with them at the Spaghetti Factory. We love the Spaghetti Factory down there in the Gaslamp District. Then Wednesday and Thursday were just normal evenings. And then on Friday night, last night, the reason we're recording now on Saturday night, Ann and I went to the Pink show at the Forum. So I think back in September, I won these tickets, remember, from winning in the Battle of the Sexes. And then,
oh, that's right.
And then all these months later, we're like, oh, now we finally get to go to the show. And her show is amazing. She's quite the performer.
Because you knew about the shampoo.
What?
You knew about the shampoo.
What shampoo?
That was the question you won on the Battle of the Sexes.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Fructise.
Yeah. Yeah, come on.
So she's an amazing performer. She is a rock star, as she claims. So it was a great evening.
Well, cool. Glad you had a good time.
How was your week?
Week was good. Spring break this week.
So oh, wow.
Well, I had a lot of hard training planned. Didn't quite work out the way it was. So early in the week, broke a spoke. So then Clarissa came, rescued me over at Halama Beach. And then the following day, I rode up, you know, I changed wheels and stuff. I rode up Figueroa Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've ridden like all over the place. Tons of mountain roads and such. Bar none, hardest climb I've ever done, you know, and it's just a horrifically awful climb, but it gets you strong for sure. It's just so steep. I mean, you're looking at 17% grades and, you know, and it goes on about 10 miles. And I mean, it's awful, but you get really strong from it. And then parts of like the downhill is like a mile of gravel road because they don't pave it because it washes out. And I mean, it's super steep and it's beautiful though. I mean, the vistas and everything are just gorgeous, overlooking Santa Barbara County. And yeah,
but when you're dry heaving, that's not fun. Doesn't matter what it looks like.
Oh yeah. I mean, you're just at your limit the whole way. I mean, you're just miserable, but like I said, it gets you strong. And then, it ended. So Thursday, I was going to go back to Halama Beach and got a flat, like, you know, a couple miles from the house. So I'm like, oh man, you know, I'm not going to go like some 60 mile ride on without like a spare tube. And so I rode home,
yeah,
changed out tires and tubes and kind of regathered myself. I get to the bottom of the hill, boom, another flat.
It's just not the time.
You know, I got my flat repaired. I rode home and I was just done for the day. I'm, you know, miserable. So then got all like regrouped again, leave for Friday to go do the same ride. I get about, you know, a quarter of the way into my ride. So I'm on Halama Road heading to the beach and boom, a flat again.
All right, what's wrong with all these tires?
I don't know, but one of them, a patch failed. And anyway, so I get a flat, you know, and later, I put in a new tube. That one goes flat. I'm patching things. And this guy pulls up, this guy, Roy, pickup truck. He has like 2,500 acre ranch, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, heading out to the beach. I saw you. Now do you need some help? I'm like, are you going to Lompoc? He said, yeah. I said, oh, well, you know, I live in this one neighborhood. And it's like, so I throw my bike in the back of his truck and good Samaritan Roy, and he owns like a big Victorian house in town that everybody knows and stuff, so it's kind of interesting to meet the guy who lives there. But yeah, so I come to find later, the liner between the spokes and the tube was cracked. It was like rubber that was like, you know, or like a hard plastic, whatever, that was like dry rotted and cracked.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the tube would just pierce a little bit, and then you'd get a little, like, you know,
oh,
it would just pop in there. So I relined it and stuff, and all's good now. But man, it was driving me. I'm like, I couldn't figure, and I'm on the side of the road. What am I gonna do, you know? So anyway, I redeemed myself. I went out for, you know, an 85 mile five pass ride today. And
so did you have any TJP business cards on you when Roy picked you up?
Oh, Roy's like a retired dude who's like in his, I don't know, probably late 60s. He doesn't seem to go to the movies much, you know? So yeah. And then no, I didn't have any business cards anyway, you know, but yeah, just like, I mean, I'll tell you though, there's nothing. Then you're out there and you're afraid to hit any bump on the road because you're like, oh, I'm going to get a flat if I hit a bump.
Another flat.
Yeah. But no, today was a good ride. Felt really well rested because I didn't do much riding the way I wanted to. All right, Ted, we have a return of the trailer to the trailer.
That's right.
Haven't had one of those in a while.
I know. We've been straying away from it. Seems like people are kind of trusting their audience, but this is more of a traditional fare. I also think genre plays into it. It feels like horror films.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Horror films have like the need of pushing the suspense and grabbing the audience, you know?
Is this a cautionary tale? Well, first, I guess we should say what we're talking about. Child's Play, a new Chucky movie.
That's right. Child's Play, which is like a reboot.
Yeah.
And we kind of know it's a reboot because it says from the producers of It, you know? So one of the early cards, you know, talks about.
Right. Right.
From the producers of It. But even before that, one of the things that really made me happy to see, I think, was the Orion Pictures.
Yeah, I thought that too. And it was kind of like a low resolution version of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a grain to it.
Yeah.
They didn't clean it up. They didn't put it high res. They went in their stock footage and they kind of got like the crappy VHS version of their logo.
And they got to do tracking on it, you know, and
they're like, they got a clean version of it. And they're like, dirty this up a little bit, you know? So to me, I thought that was great. So when I watched it first, I saw that low resolution and I immediately thought that we were getting spoofed a little bit, that it was one of those, you know, trailer YouTube channels that was kind of giving us some other thing. So I went around and I found the official Orion Pictures site channel. And then I got it from that. So yes, I agree that they're going for something specific there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So would you say this is like a cautionary tale of a psychopathic doll controlling the Internet of Things in your house?
I think you remove the psychopathic doll and I think you have it. I think the Internet of Things is scary enough that if you have AI, you know, AI doesn't even have to be evil to make our lives a horror movie, you know?
I'm going to turn up your furnace in the middle of July, you know? And then you're in there like, why is it so hot in the house? You know, I can't sleep.
You know? Yeah, it does a nice job of mixing in, you know, the cues of current day, like you said, the Internet of Things, but then just pulling out the old good old kitchen knife, you know?
Right. Yeah.
The household items are always the scariest, you know?
Unless it's like an internet connected toaster. Yeah. Yeah. But do we need another Chucky movie?
Yeah.
Oh, we do. Okay. I guess that's it.
No, I think it was successful.
Right.
And because, you know, Stephen King's It was successful in rebooting itself.
Pet Cemetery.
Oh, yeah, that the successfulness of that isn't so widely critically acclaimed, I guess.
But it's still a reboot though of a former, right?
Still a reboot, you know. I think we're in for a couple of years of this. And like you said, this is a different angle on it. Before it was literally demonic possession of a doll. And now it's, I don't know how much of that plays into this, but you know, this is more of the automation horror movie.
So you think the software goes awry and then he just starts slashing people?
Yeah. I mean, it, like you said, it's a cautionary tale. It speaks to how little we control the devices and the internet around us and how we're at the mercy of many of these corporations. So
yeah, Silicon Valley, right?
Yes.
I'll have to say though, man, I am just glad my name isn't Andy because I don't think I'd be sleeping if it were. That end when he's like, good night, Andy. Oh my God. Talk about Creepsville. So I know we've talked about it in the past, but you're not really a horror guy, though.
No.
Yeah, me neither.
And you're not either, right? Yeah, okay.
No, I'm not really a horror guy. I mean, I would go and this would scare me. I'd have nightmares. Although I will watch like a good zombie movie, though. I don't mind zombies. I just don't like zombies are one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, like they're chasing you or you got to get away. You don't make noise and whatever it might be. But something like this is like slasher films just don't do it for me.
Right. So if either slasher or straight up horror is not your cup of tea, you like the subgenre of zombies.
Right.
I like some of the zombie movies. There's cool angles on zombie movies that they do.
I mean, some could be a little over the top though.
Yeah.
You know,
I like thrillers. I think thriller is somewhat of a subgenre. It can be a subgenre, but it can also be a completely separate, you know, there's horror thrillers and drama thrillers, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, let's go back a long time. If you look at Psycho, for example, I would say that's more a thriller and not a horror.
Right.
You know, I mean, sure, they show the murder scene, but they leave more to your imagination than they do. It's more of like, you know, just getting you in your mind rather than just being just gratuitous.
Right.
You know, and I think it's the gratuitousness of slasher movies that, you know, and if it's Jason Voorhees type Friday the 13th, just don't have sex if you're not married.
Or at the lake.
At the lake house. Right. I don't know. I think seeing as, like I said, not to have sex at the lake house, let's move on to Skin.
Although that is a little bit of a different double entendre when you for sure. say it like that.
So, Ted, would you ever tat your face?
No. I don't think I could.
I couldn't go there either, man. Like, I have no tats, but like I would do minimal and in probably very specific parts. Like maybe like on my upper arm or on a calf, you know, maybe like a pec, like chest pec area, top of my back, maybe. That would be like about it as far as where I would go with tats. But you don't have tats, do you?
Yeah, I have one. I have the Pearl Jam Alive Man on my shoulder.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that I got that early in life, and I'd never regretted it, and I like it a lot to this day, and I'm a big fan. So it's all right.
So tattoos for you haven't been addictive like they are for some people.
Yeah, they have not.
I hear that they could be addictive and you wind up with like arrows on your forehead or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know. So this actor obviously doesn't have these tattoos. And I thought it was really cool how they must have had to reapply the fake tattoos throughout the filming of this movie. But yeah, the face tattoos and the hand tattoos, those are the things you can't have and you can't be in the military, right?
You mean like face tattoos and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they don't want face. I mean, people have tattoos. Tattoos in the military, but yeah, you know,
tons of body tattoos. But I think,
yeah,
I think there was a movie that Charlie Sheen was in where he got tattoos on the back of his hands because that would keep him out of the military or something.
Yeah, I don't remember. Charlie Sheen. You know, maybe on my knuckles, though, I'll get like Just Ride or something.
Oh, you were going to do the bike chain.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, when I flex, it breaks, you know. No, but this one, man, just kind of, you know, neo-Nazis exist.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Then, you know, like skinheads and white supremacists are, this one just sickens me, though.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, like, but it looks like he has like a come to Jesus moment where he needs to like leave the thing and
yeah.
He wants to make a change.
No, he definitely has that epiphanal moment, you know? So
exactly, yeah.
You're kind of rooting for him, you're hoping for him. And growing up when we grew up, to me, American History X was such a big movie, one of the big Edward Norton Jr. movies. So I think one of his best. This to me feels very similar to that, where there's a cycle of racism, a cycle of just this evilness that kind of just perpetuates itself. And then, you know, as you're trying to break it, there are so many forces against you that the audience is pulling for you to change, but they can understand maybe why you can't necessarily break out of this cycle.
Yeah.
And I thought A24 is such a great company to kind of tackle this idea.
They're definitely an art house. I mean, I watched probably 100 trailers trying to figure out what music score they used this on before. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't.
That like scratchy guitar.
Oh.
You know, that they put in there. It's in some other trailer that we've done, like a horror type trailer that we've done. I watched like 100 trailers. I can't figure out which one it is.
Huh.
But yeah, it's like once I heard it, I was like, we did that trailer. I heard that music before.
Oh, maybe the guy who cut this will listen to our podcast, and then we can have him on, and he'll tell us.
And he'll say, yeah, you know, music, my hard drive only has 3 songs instead of all the songs. But, you know, I don't know, maybe listen again, you know, at some point and see if you could figure out which it is. And all right. I don't know, but it was driving me mad.
We'll put it in the notes if we can figure it out.
But yeah, I mean, A24, I think, is a good company for putting together something like this, because I find that when you look at a lot of production companies and even distribution and things, they're a very human storied production company for the types of movies that they make. Mm-hmm. And so many of what they put out there has that, like, just human element of the side of life that you don't typically see or get into. You know, I don't know who they have or who they're using for their consultation. Uh-huh. To, like, get a story that's so deep into, like, neo-Nazi white supremacist stuff. But, man, it just looks so authentic, though.
Yeah, no, they do a lot of homework, it seems.
Yeah.
But I do have a, like, a nitpicky thing. Another one of their quotes, they have a quote up here.
Okay.
And I love the source. The source is RogerEbert.com, so obviously a very reputable site. But it says, leaves a lasting impression as it peels off a shameless past, a shameful past. It's just so much to read. You know what I mean? It's like a 3-line sentence. It's not a simple sentence. It leaves a lasting impression as it peels off a shameful past. And it's just, it goes by. They give it enough time on the screen. Maybe it's a little short for me because I'm a very slow reader. But even if they gave it enough time, it's like your mind has to process it.
You have to digest that and comprehend what they mean by peeling and the metaphors in there. Right. And no, I thought the same thing. I thought, like, well, what does that mean? And I'm thinking about it before. I'm like, well, man, I'm missing the trailer. Let me get back to the trailer. And I kind of just, like, shoved it off. And then I didn't really think much more about it afterwards. But
right.
Yeah, no, I agree with that statement, though, because I think when you're watching something in a 2-minute span of time or 2.5 minutes, whatever it might be, and you want to, like, capture your audience and stuff, I mean, you have to be, in my opinion, you have to be a little bit more simple. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, you're reading it. It flashes quick. You're digesting a ton of jump cuts because you're trying to, like, fit in this trailer with dialogue and music, and you're trying to figure out, like, make a decision. Is this a movie I want to go see? And if you're making me, like, work at it, you know, like, it's just, I then again, if you take the YouTube culture, I mean, you can pause it.
You can pause it. You can look at it again. You can watch it.
Right.
I guess I'm just I'm a quote spot purist. If you're going to have quotes in the spot, don't have them up long enough to read. Don't use really long ones, really long quotes. And then they do this thing where they're kind of cute with it, where they kind of obscure it, or they put it inside of the picture. So sometimes the car passes in front of the quote.
Yeah.
You know, and then it kind of, which is cool for, like, title graphics for a movie. But for me, it kind of ruins the idea of what quotes are there to sell the movie. So I'm more of the traditionalist where you put quotes over black and have it up long enough to read it, or have a VO guy read it. You know, if you're doing TV spots, for sure, I think they should have more people reading stuff on TV spots, because half the time people are distracted when they're at home, especially when commercials are there and they're forced to watch them. You know, that's when people look away, look at their phone, do something else. So if you're having a quote spot, I think you need to, you know, show and tell.
Eat a donut.
So I want to see this movie, but it looks like a hard emotional pill to swallow.
I think the biggest thing that I would take from it is, like, guilt, you know, like, and I think it's like there's, like, two sides to the guilt. One is maybe he wants to stop being the white supremacist guy with the tatted face and the checkered past, and, you know, he has the guilt of whatever he's done, whoever he beat up, possibly murdered. I mean, who knows what the guy did,
right?
And then the other side of the guilt is abandoning the people in your life that are still, maybe it might be your parents, aunts and uncles, friends that, you know, you have a life with, and now you're turning your back on them saying like, I'm not like you anymore. I want to get out of this thing. And, you know, they kind of, you know, you come across with that kind of guilt, like somebody who might be leaving a religion or something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then like you turn your back on, you know, whatever it might be. I mean, you know, you're a Jehovah's Witness or something and you're going to leave or whatever it is. Right.
Yeah.
So there's like the two sides of guilt that I see coming from the guy, and both of those things are probably impossible to live with. And it's like the best way he can do it is to just get rid of the face tats.
Yeah.
When he calls the cop or whatever it is.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. The other movie this reminded me of, other than American History X, is Black Klansman. You know, just the idea of the skinheads versus the Klan.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Black Klansman about a month ago, and it was impactful, but not. Do we care about spoilers? There's a mild spoiler, but if you haven't seen Black Klansman now, I think it's been out long enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Black Klansman obviously is based on a true story of a black police sergeant or black police. Detective who infiltrated the Klan. And the whole movie, here's my gripe with it a little bit. The whole movie is all basically stuck in the past, in the 1970s, I believe, when this was happening. And so you feel like this distance from the movie, and you feel like, okay, that's the past. Even if it's based on a true story, you know, what they're doing is completely separate from modern day times.
Like a Dirty Harry movie or something.
Yeah. And you could feel a little superior to it, a little like, has the distance of a sociological, you know, examination of something that is coming from the past.
Sure.
But Spike Lee, at the end of the movie, he hits you straight in the gut with Charlotte. Is it Charlottesville or is it Charlotte?
You're talking about in North Carolina? Yeah. Yeah, Charlottesville.
That's Virginia, right?
That was North Carolina. Well, there's a Charlotte, North Carolina, right? Yeah, I don't know.
So at the end of Black Klansman, Spike Lee hits us in the gut with extended footage from Charlottesville, Virginia, where the car ran over the crowd of people and killed a woman.
Oh, man.
And it's just amazing. He holds these images and he just pulls all of this racism and all of this animosity from the 1970s straight up to like this news footage feed, which is like the last 10 minutes of the movie. And it removes all of the distance that you had from all the things that were going on through the whole beginning of the movie.
Wow.
And then like, and I said, it's a long way to go for a joke, because like at the very end of the 1970s, he calls David Duke, the grand master, the Ku Klux Klan or whatever it is, the grand wizard.
The grand poobah.
Whatever they're called. Yeah. And he says, oh, I'm Stallworth. You inducted me into the Klan and I'm a black man, you know? And he basically says it by using, you know, different dialects and different words and things like that. But I said, to me, that was a kind of like a horrible way to end it, if they were going to end it, if Spike was going to end it there, because it was a long way to go for a joke, basically to call somebody up and say, you know, is your refrigerator running? You better go out and chase it or something, you know? But then to throw the Charlottesville news footage in as the 10 minutes after that, just like I said, brings everything up to the front. And I think this kind of picks up, Skin kind of picks up where that leaves off, where it's very intense. It's very now. It's rooted in something that could happen today, tomorrow, next week.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's move on to The Boys. So kind of like a vulgar Marvel.
Yeah, it feels more DC than Marvel to me.
Ah, DC, I gotcha. Okay, because they're more one-dimensional characters.
They're more of the archetypes, definitely archetypes. I like it. I like what they're doing. I like where they're going. I like how they're pushing the envelope, you know?
Yeah, there's two trailers in this trailer. One is more of like, and I don't know if it was intended that way or if that's the one you sent me or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But the first one is like a traditional kind of a trailer that you would get for like a movie or something. The second one I would say is more TV spot, gives you the 30 second or so, like with the overtone music, and they just show a bunch of scenes. I think they should be flipped though.
Okay.
Like do that one, then kind of maybe give a warning. Not everybody's ready for the blood and guts vulgarity trailer that might come out. out. And, you know, and then you could say like, oh, wow, this is cool. Let's see more. And you know what I mean? Like,
right.
And then you're like, oh, wait, thanks for the warning. I don't want to watch that part now or whatever, you know, but yeah. So you think it's more like DC.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said they're one dimensional. I think they're meant to be more simplistic superheroes.
Yeah.
And to me, it really kind of flies in the face of what's good and what's bad.
With regard to what?
With regard to like who's on what side, you know?
Oh, I follow you. Yeah. So there's a demarcation of good guy versus bad guy.
There is a demarcation of good guy versus bad guy, but I think through exploration of these characters, it feels like that is kind of going to get it tossed on its head.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I don't know.
Yeah. I think Carl Urban is played as the bad guy, but it feels like he has maybe a stronger moral code.
Okay.
And all these superheroes, because they are archetypes, they have the code that they live by, but it's a lot easier for them to follow a very much more simplistic code.
Yeah, like in a sense, Superman is always good, no matter what.
Right.
Yeah, like his morals can't be faltered.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I would watch something like this. I mean, you know, and it's...
Is it too gory?
Yeah, it's just a little bit. I mean, like, again, I'm not, you know, I leave something to the imagination. Let me think about it. You know, have implications and metaphors or something to make my brain think a little bit and not just show me the nasty guts, whatever, you know? Uh-huh. I don't know. I might try an episode or two and see. And if it's over the top with that stuff, I probably won't. Continue.
I only made it through the half of the first season of Preacher, but I liked what I saw in like the pilot of Preacher. So this is from the same producers of Preacher. Again, kind of leads me to believe the whole idea of good versus evil, because Preacher was another one where they're all bad guys, but the bad guys you like have more of a moral compass, regardless of whether they're doing evil. So I think that's an interesting factor to me.
Okay. Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I don't know. I think also, so, you know, we were talking about like the blood and guts side of it too, but it also has the idea that there's going to be a lot of gratuitous sex involved.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Gratuitous sex that ends up being like gratuitous violence, it looks like.
Yeah, it looks like an S&M bondage thing you just don't want to be a part of.
Speak for yourself. Oh, no, you can speak for me too.
Right. All right. So, yeah, you think you're going to watch it, though, The Boys?
I liked it. I liked it enough to give it a shot for sure.
Okay. And then, I don't know, the title, The Boys, but yet there's like women superheroes. And what do you think?
Yeah, to me, the Boys doesn't even mean anything yet. I don't even know what it, I don't even know what they're referring to. Yeah, I think it's a bit of a misnomer. It feels a little bit like a title by committee, but you know, maybe it'll have more implications once you watch it.
You watch a few episodes and then all of a sudden,
if it's an inside joke about something, then maybe it's worth, it has more value.
It'll make sense after the first episode or something.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Oh, speaking of this kind of leads into what we've been watching.
Go for it, because that was the next thing, I guess.
Yeah. Ann and I tried to watch the Umbrella Society. Is that what it is?
Oh, no, the Umbrella. Yeah, the superhero one.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm drawing a blank. What is it? The Umbrella? The Umbrella League? No, the Umbrella.
Umbrella Academy.
So you guys tried to watch the Umbrella Academy.
So yeah, we tried to watch the Umbrella. Ann and I tried to watch the Umbrella Academy. And we watched the full pilot. So we got through that whole episode and Ann was still engaged in it. But I don't think we, maybe watched half of another episode and both fell asleep. So I don't know. We might keep watching that. But Ann kind of half checked out. So it's hard to find something we're both into.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we did Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, good. How'd you like that? No,
not really. So, yeah, I remember when that one came out because, you know, I never saw it before, but the trailers and stuff with the talking raccoon and
Rocket.
It was a little bit too bizarre. However, we also watched Avengers Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, minus the flying asteroid city that they were planning on crashing back to the Earth and all that stuff, like, put that aside. It was one of the better Avengers, I think.
Okay.
Like, I think they got more into character development. It wasn't strictly origin stories. So you got to see the relationship start to develop between Bruce Banner and Scarlett Johansson's character. What's her name?
Black Widow.
Yeah, Black Widow, but not Natasha. What is it?
I think you're right.
Natasha. Yeah. Yeah, Natasha. Yeah, so you got to watch...
Natasha Romanoff.
Romanoff, that's it, yeah. You got to see, like, kind of their relationship start to develop a little bit, and just, you know, you see Hawkeye, and then you learn he has a family, and he's kind of fighting for the greater good for his family and all this stuff, and the wife, and she's pregnant, and so it was a little bit more human, I guess, in that regard. And then, I don't know, the snarky computer robot killer, you know, that was a little bit goofy, I thought. But then the other thing I thought was cool, though, well, the one thing I loved was the bumper sticker, "Jarvis is my co-pilot." But the thing that I thought was really cool, though, was, so going back to my childhood, there was this character in the, because I had a stint for a little while with Marvel Comics,
uh-huh.
And there was this one dude, I kind of never really knew who he was, how he got into the fray and all this stuff. And it was the Jarvis guy with the Infinity Stone in his forehead that he would laser beam people with.
Yeah, Vision.
Right? Yeah. Well, okay, yeah. But what I'm saying, though, it was like the Jarvis computer, and, you know, he got embedded, and, you know, and yeah. So it was like his origin story.
Yes.
In a way. You know what I mean? And it's a minor origin story, I guess, you know, because he's not a major player. At least he wasn't up until this point.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it brought me right back to being a 10-year-old, and, like, the pictures that I recall in the comics of this guy floating, laser beaming people, and I'm like, who the heck is this dude? And it took all the way, you know, 38 years later, whatever it might have been, or, you know, 40 years later, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that's who that guy is, and that's how he got here. Because it seems like the characters and stuff have been pretty, you know, and the stories, at least, and stuff have been pretty on par with what the comics do, you know what I mean?
Right. But they look different, though.
Well, which ones? Iron Man?
No, I mean all of them. Like, Scarlet Witch doesn't look like Scarlet Witch of the comic books.
Oh, I follow you. Yeah, yeah.
There's a cool meme that goes through all the different characters, and it kind of dresses up the characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as characters from the comic book. So it puts, like, the red suit on top of Scarlet Witch, and it shows all of, like, what the characters look like in the comic books. But then it puts, like, the face of the actor in the suits.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's kind of cool. And then this past week, I learned a little bit about, like, Norse mythology and so on.
Oh, cool.
And the Thor and, you know, Loki and all that kind of stuff, it, like, they do follow pretty similar to what Norse mythology is, which is pretty, like, surprising, because I was thinking, like, they just deviated so far from it, but they actually didn't. It's like, Thor is, you know, in that whole world, you know, Asgard and all this stuff, it's really pretty on par with what Norse mythology. I mean, there is like Hollywood and stuff, of course, but it's surprising how similar and how accurate everything about, like, the Thor side of the stories are.
It's true to the myth.
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty close. It's pretty close. So I thought that was cool. What have you been watching?
So, like I said, I watched that Black Klansman at work.
Yeah.
That's almost a month ago. But it never came up. And then 2 weeks ago, I watched All That Jazz.
All That Jazz.
The 1979 Roy Scheider movie by Bob Fosse.
Okay.
And it was amazing. I was surprised how much it has held up. And I guess I say that having never seen the movie before, but as being a movie from 1979, where I was, 5 years old, so I wouldn't have seen it.
Right.
That first run around. So it was an amazing kind of surreal, it felt like a foreign film, but it's an American film. So I think that was the neatest thing about that. And then over the weekend on Sunday night, we saw, I rented Bumblebee.
Oh, okay.
I rented Bumblebee and Aquaman from Redbox.
How was Aquaman?
So Aquaman was good, but to me, it was a little too much fantasy. And Anne's going to probably keep me honest, but I fell asleep somewhat through the last half hour. I got the movies on Sunday night, and I knew I had my Monday night gala to go to, so I wasn't going to be able to watch it on Monday before 9 o'clock. So we had to power through. We started Bumblebee at like 7 or 8 or something, and then put the kids to bed a little bit late last Sunday night, and then turned on Aquaman at whatever it was, like 10 or 11 o'clock. And I think Aquaman's a 2.5 hour movie, 2 hours, 40 minutes. And by 1 o'clock, I was like nodding off. And I think Anne just took mercy on me and let me sleep through the last half hour on and off. But it had some good action, and it had some good points to it. Had some interesting story developments. But I don't know, there's a little too much fantasy, a little too much to leave up, you know, to suspend your disbelief, you know, when they're swimming around underwater. The speed at which they swim is like, all right, you kind of have to just like say, okay, they're going to go fast underwater, but they go so fast. It's like, why do they need ships at all? You know, so there's a lot of, you know, head scratchers where you don't know what's going on, but they're cool characters. They're in decent, you know, scenarios. So you let some things play out.
You know, and it's funny, as a kid, like I always enjoyed DC for some reason or another, and, you know, over Marvel. Mm-hmm. But Aquaman was always that character I just never really understood. Okay, so the guy goes underwater and talks to fish. Like, why is that like a important superpower? You know?
Yeah, I watched a lot of Justice League, right?
And Justice League and all that, yeah.
And it was, and to me, I loved the, what is it, the Wonder Twins?
Unite!
The Wonder Twins, and they have their rings and they go together, and she becomes an animal and he becomes a pail of water. You know what I mean? I always thought it was hilarious, like he was making people slip, you know, because he would like spill himself as a pail of water. But, you know, I always thought, well, it's kind of weird because Aquaman will jump into the ocean and call his dolphin friends. But you know, even the Wonder Twins and their cheesy powers are still cooler than talking to fish. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I was always like, well, why is this guy cool? Doesn't even make sense to me, you know? And whatever. You know, I'd like to see it. I mean, it looks cool.
No, you should see it. I mean, see it much earlier than we saw it, you know?
Yeah, for 2 hours, 40 minutes or whatever. That's a long one.
You better start that at 8 with a cup of coffee.
Oh, dude, that's way too late. That's way too late.
I will say Jason Momoa is amazing in it. And I guess you know him from Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah. Khal Drogo.
Yeah. So the cast was amazing. I don't know why. I don't know. I guess I wasn't into it. I might need to see it again. And Bumblebee, to me, Bumblebee was something that I really, really wanted to like. And I stayed awake for most of that, I believe. But it too kind of fell flat a little bit. And I can't put my finger on it. I love the soundtrack. I love that it's kind of stuck in the 80s and the 90s. And I just don't know why.
You mean the soundtrack or the whole thing is in the
80s? Whole movie. The whole movie is in, you know, a period piece.
Oh, okay.
So to me, that's interesting. And I like Transformers. But I think it was just solely based on one character. I think that might have been it. There's a lot of bad guys, but to me the Transformers are a team, and just Haley Stanfield and Bumblebee wasn't enough for me to get excited about in the cinematic experience here.
A little bit too one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha. You'd rather see them come in as a team to take out Voltron or something?
Megatron, yeah.
Megatron, that's it.
Voltron's another IP.
Man.
Oh, and then what else did I watch? The last thing that I'll say that I watched was the Investors video that was put out by Disney to announce their Disney Plus service.
Oh, okay.
Which was amazing. And did you listen to Exponent this week?
I did.
The fast talker, Ben, Ben Thompson.
I got to take a nap after that one, man. That guy he talks so fast. Like I'm exhausted.
He was especially excited this week. And I wanted to get his quote, but I'm going to just paraphrase him where he said something along the lines of Bob Iger will go down as one of the greatest CEOs of modern days. And I thought that was so amazing. And the way that he outlined in this week's Exponent podcast, to me, that was the best thing I listened to all week.
Yeah, it was a good one. And even the way they just kind of outlined and described the cable TV model and why bundling is better than a la carte. And I mean, it was just kind of, you know, it was pretty interesting, you know.
It was a good 101 that rolled into, you know, advanced.
Yeah, for sure.
Media, like it hit high gear, you know, 11 minutes in, and then it you know, took off half an hour in, and it was just, it went all the places that I like talking about. So
yeah, for sure. It was cool.
How about you? What you saw those couple movies, any TV or just?
No, we haven't done any Game of Thrones yet. I know all the Game of
Thrones. You're saving it up?
I think we might be saving it up and we're just going to binge it. Cause like, we're like, I mean, can we handle one a week, you know? So I think we're just going to roll through and do like all eight at once or whatever. Boom.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe not all at once.
You have to wait like 7 weeks and just back it up so you can see the finale with everybody else.
Yeah. It'll be something like that.
Or like within a day or two of everybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. That's kind of what we were planning, because I'm like,
you should do the finale with everybody else. Cause the finale, that's what people are really going to want to talk about.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, however it ends. Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, actually what we probably should do is get on there now and just binge like the first all the way through. And then we finish with the finale and we're just, every night is Game of Thrones.
Ugh.
And then you're like,
it sounds so crazy.
And then every episode from this point forward, Jim, where are you at now? But yeah, it's like the Marvel challenge and the GOT challenge, you know, like,
oh, no, thank you.
Yeah, that's a lot, but man. that's pretty much been it. I mean, it's been like, you know, a lot of just going to bed early and getting up to train and...
Oh, yeah, I meant to ask you. So when you go up to Leadville,
yeah,
how much gear are you going to take? Because you're going to have all those extra tubes and extra everything. And are you like a one-man team? You're going to have you and Clarissa with like her wrench or something? And
yeah, more or less. Bike has tubeless tires.
Okay.
So you can run lower pressures. You're not at risk of, I mean, you could still get flats, of course.
Yeah.
And it's up to you to do your own repairs. So I'll have like, you know, my little like repair kit and stuff. So if I wind up getting a flat, I can pop off the tire and I can put in a tube, you know, and, mm-hmm. and get myself back rolling again. I mean, I probably won't have, you know, any chain issues. I probably shouldn't say that. I'm jinxing myself, but no, I mean, I could see like wheel problems, you know, because if you have a wheel that like tacos in a crash, or you have, you know, flats and things, those are probably the biggest things that'll be at risk.
All right. So you said taco, but I don't know what that means.
You know, like it bends to, looks like your rim goes like, looks, yeah.
Okay.
Like it literally will look like a taco shell, right?
Okay.
But no, I mean, like, I think other than like having like some crazy, obviously I could get hurt too if I crash or mm-hmm. something, you know, broke a collarbone or something, which I don't want. But yeah, I mean, you're pretty much self-supported. When I get to the feed stations or the support zones, Clarissa's going to be there, and we're working out our plan of like how to change out, you know, water and food and, you know, things like of that nature. I mean, to try and make the transfer as seamless as possible and quick. So give everybody a kiss and hit the road.
How frequent are those stops?
I forget. They're like every 20 miles or something, 25 miles.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah. There's there's like four of them. And then what it is, so it's like she goes to the first one. We do our little change or exchange there. I take off. She packs everybody up in the car, goes to the next one. I meet them. We do our exchange. But they stay because I hit that one twice. So I go through it. I go to the top of the mountain. I come back down and I'm there.
Oh, okay.
So like you go through, you leave, and then you come back to that one. And then it's like, then she goes back to the other one, and then she'll go back to the finish line and watch me finish, you know?
Cool.
So, yeah.
How long does it take? What's the average run?
So it's like 104 miles and less than 12 hours gets you a silver belt buckle and less than 9 hours gets you a bigger gold belt buckle. The course record is somewhere, I don't know exact, but it's somewhere around 6 hours, and that's...
Holy smokes.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking like pro cyclists, you know. I just hope to finish, to be honest with you, but I would love to get under 9 hours.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I went out and did 100 miles last Sunday over Figaro Mountain. And I mean, you know, huge ass mountain, tons of climbing. I mean, it's like I said, it's a wreck, it's just horrible. 17 degree grades and all this stuff.
Ugh.
And I still did it in less than, I think I did it in like 6 and 40 minutes or something, 6 hours, 40 minutes. I did that particular, and it was like, I forget, 101 miles or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the climb was slow. I'm not going to lie about that. The climb was definitely slow, but all the rest of the stuff, I'm cruising pretty good. I mean, you know, the rollers, and even today I was out for 85 miles and I don't remember what my time was, but it was 440 or something.
But that's starting at sea level and going up, right? Or closer to sea level than the Leadville.
Oh,
right?
For sure. Yeah. Leadville. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, everybody says the same thing. The course isn't hard. You know, it's not technical. It suits like road riders, all that kind of stuff, you know, but it's like at 12,000 feet.
Are you going to get that rebreather thing?
Rebreather?
The thing you could wear like a mask.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah. No, I don't know. We're getting there a week early.
Cause that simulates yeah, I know what like you mean. Low oxygen or whatever.
Yeah. No, we're getting there like a week early.
Oh, okay.
To acclimate a little bit. And, you know, I've done mountain biking over 14,000 feet and I've bagged peaks hiking over 14,000 feet. And I tend to like, I'm pretty good up until about 13,000. And then it's like I hit a wall.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, there's a big change in like physiology whenever I do that stuff. And fortunately, I think the highest we go is like 12.5. So I'm thinking I'll be mostly okay if I'm there a week early.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so far the training's going pretty good. I mean, I feel strong and, you know, it's like, I'm not riding so much that I'm just burning myself out. You know what I mean? Like just life gets in the way and you just can't ride every day, you know?
Do you have a countdown calendar in your garage?
I have a spreadsheet
uh-huh.
that I'm like logging volume.
Okay.
So like miles and time, and that's kind of like a countdown. Yeah. So like I know where I'm at in weeks and what I need to be doing my training. Yeah.
How many days till?
Oh, now you're gonna make me pull it up. I don't know, to be honest. August 10th, whatever that is. So like it's you know, what is that? That's like 4 months out, maybe ish. Yeah. Probably about four, little less than 4 months. So, but yeah, we move from, you know, movie and TV talk to bicycle training and racing talk. So,
oh, I love it.
Real quick, how'd your beer finish up?
The beer is still finishing. You know, it's a good Belgian. It's like a, you know, Allagash is known for their white ales, and this is a golden Belgian. So it's good. It's a good triple.
Yeah, I like them.
Yeah, it's still good. It's still not. I was trying to venture away from IPAs this week.
Yeah, me too.
But I just, I really love IPAs. There's so many people out there that have pushed back against the IPA fad, which is definitely, there's definitely a fad. Because it is
oh yeah, add more hops.
It's saturated the market. You know, there's 100 different ways to do it differently, and you add, like you said, add more hops. But to me, it's just the complexity of the hops is great, and like this is a really good beer, and yet it's not exciting.
Okay, yeah, I see what you mean.
How about you?
What I would say, the one thing, it was, you know, like kind of like almost like a sparkling wine.
Yeah.
I would like to see more, like more carbonation.
Yeah. The sours are, yeah, exactly.
More of a mouthfeel, you know, it flattened out a little bit too fast, and more of a mouthfeel would make it taste like beer and not a Bartles and James.
Thank you for your support.
Yeah, flavor-wise, and you know, the body and stuff of it, I think was good. I would just like more of a mouthfeel on the carbonation side of stuff, more of like a creamier head and so on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're doing something with I think it's Fat Tire is doing a Brut IPA, and I think that if you do like a Brut sour, that might be really interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I've had that Brut IPA.
It's light, right? It's kind of a lighter IPA.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 4.6 or something.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's kind of weird. But no, I mean, I liked it. It was good. It went down super easy, super smooth.
I don't think it warms well, though. Sours.
No, but I didn't give it a chance.
Good on ya.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, man.
Have a good week.
Yeah, you too. Hope you don't fall asleep for any of your shows.
All right. Have a good night.
All right, Ted. We'll talk to you.
Bye.
Bye now.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.